This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored in part by TradeStation.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China's economic slowing to a crawl. Still blaming the weather. Five things you need to know. And we're going to talk about stockbrokers ranking with Blaine Rankensmeyer from stockbrokers.com. All this and much more on episode number 352 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, and it is the end of February. That was a little bit of a short month. We had some holidays in there, a mixed market in the last week, coming off a couple of weeks of very nice returns for the S&P 500, but basically a mirror image of what we saw in January. If you look at a chart on a daily basis and you look at the S&P 500, the Dow, maybe even the NASDAQ, you see that there was a big drop pretty much throughout the month of January, when there really was a buyer strike more than anything that went on. People were pretty much exhausted, it looks like, from buying everything they could get their hands on in 2013. And here we go, turn around 2014, and we start seeing a bunch of selling, or at least some selling, some profit taking, you want to call it, and not much going on in the buyer's camp. All of a sudden, we get that reversal day on that Thursday. Yellen's coming up. We have the employment numbers coming up, and boom, all of a sudden, there's a move to the upside. You know, and then there was a point where we got right back to close to the high that we saw back in the beginning of January, and the reversal happened again. The VIX volatility index shot up, and from there, it was all of a sudden, you know, disbelief. So the next day, there was buyers that came in for no real reason, apparently. Very little volume. And here we are now with really not much movement over the last week entirely, when you sum it up all together. There are a lot of things that I want to talk about, because there are some interesting things that have been put out over the last week. We did see that the 2008 Fed minutes and the recordings and all the information from those meetings were released. We're going to talk about that with the five things that you need to know now. But I want to talk about China first, and we'll go in order of some of the things I want to talk about. We have China that is slowing. We saw their index of manufacturing, the pre-release of the official, quote-unquote, official index, came out at about 47 and change, I believe it was. And, you know, 50 is that demarcation point of moving into either a growth phase or a contraction phase. So when we see that that is starting to come down, and the fact that stockpiling of various metals and materials has been going on without the ability for them to really produce, there's some concern there. And why is that? What's happening? Well, there was a lot of optimism going into 2013 towards the end, and there was a lot of excess manufacturing that went on, and consumers started very quietly slowing their purchases. We also had a lot of dysfunction in the Forex markets, which does have a tremendous amount of effect on what happens in manufacturing and exports, imports around the world. And if you really think about that, that is something that is very, very difficult to control. You know, the Forex market is enormous. It's unregulated. And when you have government, central banks tinkering and doing all sorts of very aggressive maneuvers to try their best to bring down the value of their currency in order to bring up the exports and therefore the manufacturing in their country, what happens? You get further dysfunction that ripples down into the rest of the world. We're going to talk about that in a bit with the G20 and what they said in a little bit. But with China slowing down as they have been, there's a red flag that needs to be raised in terms of the overall health of the world and the economics. Now, one of the things that we do know is that what we've seen over the last several years is the continuation of central banks lurching to the rescue anytime there is any slight bit of a slowing down of any economic numbers that are consistent over time, and what you've seen from that is this Pavlovian condition that has developed, that when you see that there is a series of bad numbers that comes out or lower than expected numbers that come out, that stocks miraculously start moving higher, which is really contrary to conventional wisdom in terms of how you would look at economics and the relationship to stocks that you did in the past. So now what we're finding is that when you see this, there is constantly two things that happen. Number one, the media immediately comes to the rescue and says that gives more ammunition and further potential for stimulus or for any kind of loosening of monetary policy. And beyond that, investors gobble that up, and that's great because so far we haven't seen anybody in terms of their stimulus efforts really backing off. There hasn't been much discussion about that. Sure, the United States talking about tapering, but you know, everybody's really in a state of disbelief because if you look at the last several weeks of economic data, whether it's housing, whether it's retail sales, even the employment numbers, there really isn't a good story that you can bring up. There is not a growth discussion that is being stated here in the U.S. that can be really held up pretty, you know, well at all. And with that, you're still seeing this major turnaround in markets over the last couple of weeks. And the idea is that it is because of the fact we have this negative news that the buyers are actually pouncing in there. It's also because there really isn't that many alternatives right now if you want to invest in equities. Where would you want to invest? Do you want to be in the emerging markets, which we know will have a significant downside risk if the tapering continues? Do you want to be in Japan with their sloppy economics? Do you want to be in China with the slowdown? And okay, Europe, maybe, but what else are they going to do right now in terms of their potential to fix things? But everybody knows behind the scenes, there's a lot of problems in Europe. Banks are still having a tremendous amount of bad loans. So really, when you break it all down and you want to get to the essence of it all and what really is occurring here, it is the lack of any other options that is causing money to flow into the U.S. markets. That's really that simple. And also, in the background, the idea that the central bank with Janet Yellen is going to hold things in a way that is very much comfortable for investors. So this is what's been going on. We do see still the weather is having a significant impact. Have you seen what's going on with natural gas? Wow. I mean, even with inventory numbers rising, the buyers stepped in the day after because there was some discussion that there'll be further cold weather coming in. Natural gas went up a bit on Thursday, right before the inventory numbers came out at 10:30, came in afterwards pretty significantly, you know, took back all those gains, and then on Friday decided, oh, poo, there's cold weather coming. So even though there's been a tremendous amount of cold weather, and even though we do see that inventories have risen significantly, you know what? So what? We think it's still going to get a much better premium for natural gas because of this cold weather, and there's going to be a requirement for further heating. And we also saw the manufacturing number. One manufacturing number do well. We saw the Philly, which is the most important, in my opinion, get really pummeled recently. But we did see a market number, which is a brand new number that nobody tracks, really show some strength in manufacturing. And wow, everybody got excited about markets. The factory numbers were, whoa, boy, that's fantastic. But what's interesting is the real numbers that we all track and that everybody looks at as the core numbers really have been falling pretty significantly over the last few weeks. And actually, we've seen that manufacturing overall has been falling. Service index actually fell recently as well. We see that also that consumer confidence has been falling. Yet, one number comes out and the stock buying goes on. Really kind of fascinating dynamic, which is occurring right now in markets. But when it comes to the earnings and when it comes to the sales, actually we've seen a lot more companies beat estimates, whether or not that analysts were a little bit on the pessimistic side when it came to this quarter's numbers or not. We're seeing some good beats, 1 or 2 cents, but still beats on EPS. And earnings aside, you have sales. that are also showing a decent level of, we'll call it meet or beat. Still not a great sales number, still not great revenues coming in, but with all of the buybacks that are going on, EPS is rising. And companies have significant amount of cash on their books and on balance sheets, and what are they going to do with that? They're going to pay it out in dividends these days. They're going to do some acquisitions, which we're seeing a lot of them, particularly in the biotech and healthcare area. But at the same time, they also are looking for things, and some of them find the best companies in the world to invest in are their own. So what they do is they buy back stocks and then increasing the EPS effectively over time. So kind of what's playing out here. The other thing that I think is really interesting is, if you remember last week, we talked about the news about Under Armour. We see how quickly investors react, and whether it's actually investors or maybe it's the algorithmic trading for event trading types of strategies that are just whacking or riding things higher on any news item that is a positive or negative. For example, we saw that there was this whole hoo-ha about Under Armour and their potential of their suits and the speed skaters not doing well, and they're blaming it on the suits, and Under Armour went down 2.5%, and boom, what happened? Well, we saw the CEO of Under Armour get into gear really quickly, so to speak, and he went and actually confirmed that they're going to be a sponsor and involved, and they're going to be part of the next Olympics, and there's really no problem there, so he secured that, came on, did a PR run, and really did a nice job. This guy Plank, who very impressive guy, the CEO of Under Armour, and the stock was up 5.5% on Friday, just like we predicted last week, that, you know what, this news is going to dissipate pretty quickly. This is really a news item that is just a reaction, and when people realize that this, the initial reaction is really ridiculous, the stock's going to probably move up again, and it did. Same thing with the weather, by the way. Don't be fooled. The fact is that, you know what, weather will, in fact, disrupt things, and, in fact, people will go and buy additional items if they need to, if they haven't, but there are some areas that are going to have some really big problems. Restaurants, think about that. Panera Bread came out with numbers. They guided down. The numbers didn't look good. Stock was up. But still, this is something you need to look into, because you're not going to find that people are going to buy double and go out triple and double and make up for their lack of restauranting and eating because of the weather. It's just not that kind of product. All right, a couple things before we get to our guests. I want to talk to him about, you know, if you're looking for stockbrokers, or if you want to know more about your particular custodian and broker, whoever it may be, I want to bring him on because he did a really great job of looking at a variety of different brokers that you can trade with or invest with, and their overall cost factors and their structure and what they have to offer, and just a whole host of things, from charting and fundamentals and advice you can get versus the other ones that are out there, and puts them all together very nicely. So we're going to talk to Blaine Reinkensmeyer very shortly. But a couple things I want to talk about. First of all, for those of you who did request information on the Aero strategy, that's AIRO, by the way. This is a strategy we put into place. We went live with it, I guess, about 2-3 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe. This is a strategy that is very simple. It's very elegant. It uses just the S&P 500 in the form of a ETF. It goes long, goes short, or it is out of the markets. And we get these very specific signals looking for very deeply oversold or very significantly overbought situations for buy or short or sell signals. And we went back and did a lot of work. There's a tremendous amount of indicators that are involved in this to actually seek out these points. And they're not just simply just, oh, market's down and, oh, that's a buy point. No. These have to be very specific. They have to be very much to a level for the index that we've seen where it will do a turnaround and you will see a reversal, and we look to get in or short and move into those initiate positions on those. And we went back to 1995. It's up 2,400% net of all charges. Now, this is a back test, but we do it in a way that is pretty accurate, because what happens is we look at the daily moves. We get the signal end of day. We do a first morning buy-in or sell or whatever happens in terms of the signal. And you can actually find out more information about exactly how this works. You simply go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and there's a little picture there of Aero, A-I-R-O, and you just request information. We'll send you all the details on it. And I really, you know, if you're looking to diversify from a traditional strategy. If you're looking to just maybe add some difference in trading process, if you're looking to, you know, another avenue for potential returns, well, this could be something that you would look at. Obviously, there's risk, as everything in the markets has risk, but I really encourage you to check out what we wrote up about this. I think you'd be pretty impressed, especially because the S&P 500 was only up about 400% over that same period of time. So think about that. That's a big difference. Okay? Check that out. I want you to take a look. Also, I want to mention that, of course, our good friends at TradeStation are a sponsor of this podcast and this episode. And a great, great program, great platform. Charting is probably their greatest specialty, where you can see things clearly. You know, you can have these things called desktops, and you can have inside of your desktop, which is, consider it a container. You know, on your desk, you see this chart, and you have maybe quotes on the left-hand side, and you have a 30-minute chart, a 60-minute chart, a daily chart, and you can click a button. And as soon as you click it, it changes for another stock, and very, very easy to move, maneuver, very easy to set up. Plus, they have a lot of things that are pre-done for you already. And then on top of it, they have the trading app store where you can actually try out for free many of their partners' indicators. We have a variety on them through Trigger Charts. And on top of that, what's really nice about it is they have scanners that are available, fundamental news and news items. They also have fundamental data points available, so you can chart those out if you want to do that. And on top of that, what you can also do is within your desktop, let's say desktop number one, you have multiple workspaces to click, 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 click. So you want to see, okay, a stock, and you want to see the moving averages. Let's say that's on one. You say, okay, next one I want to see stochastics or some other kind of indication. Okay, it's two. You want to see a live trading matrix. By the way, their matrix, their trading, level two trading is one of the best around because it's live. You just click at any price you want. It'll do a sell stop. It'll do a buy stop. It'll do a limit order, whatever you want it to be. And if you're trading futures in particular, wow, talking about hands-on, very easy to use, with all sorts of order, not only order constraints that you can put on it, but internally what you can do is you can also do a whole bunch of settings for, you know, if it doesn't fill at this time, or maybe at this time you want it to fill. You could set up all sorts of different parameters to actually execute that trade. And what's nice is they have a 90-day free trial for the platform. You get 90 days of free trades. There's all sorts of amazing things available. I really encourage you to check them out. This is one of the top platforms I've ever encountered. The top, in my opinion, in terms of charting, in terms of execution. Check it out over at TradeStation.com. We have all the information on a link over on the show notes of this episode and on the DisciplinedInvestor.com website. Check that out. So how about we get to our guest? Well, how about it? And our guest today is Blaine Rankensmeyer, and he is the founder of some very interesting sites that actually I want to share with you, Stock Trading to Go. And we're going to talk today primarily and a bit about stockbrokers.com, but we'll get into that in a minute. Blaine, how are you?
I'm doing great, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. I wanted to perk up your day because you're probably up there in Michigan in miserable gray skies and freezing cold weather and all that good stuff. Huh? Has it been really bad this year in Detroit?
Oh, my gosh. The winter this year has been terrible, or at least it's gone back to a few decades ago as far as coldness is concerned. So,
yeah, I've been there. I've been in Michigan in the winter, and it's not my favorite place in that time of year. Let's just say that.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. The last few winters haven't been that bad, though. I mean, last winter, I think I shoveled our driveway twice. So it's that random weather is just killing us. And today, great example, it was supposed to be 40s, and now it was snowing, and then we had sleet, and who knows, it's all over the place.
Crazy. So let's talk about some of the things that you do. I know you just spent, you were in hibernation, working on your most recent 2014 review of platforms and brokers and all that, right?
Yes, yeah, the hibernation is a great word.
So it takes you a long time because what you're doing is you're putting, how many total brokers did you review?
So the review takes us just over 5 months to complete, actually, and it's hundreds of hours. There were 17 total brokers included this year, which was the same number we had last year. So the brokers kind of have to, we consider it volunteering themselves to be succumb to our, you know, vast research and toughness. There are 266 variables we actually assess them on that fall within eight categories. So categories where everyone will know, like mobile trading, education, there's offering of investments, research, platforms and tools, ease of use, commissions and fees, and then last but not least, customer service. So all those we assess, all those 266 variables fall within that. So it might be how much does it cost to place a trade with 100 shares, or how many technical indicators are available on your active trading platform.
Mm-hmm.
So all those variables fall within those categories, and then we crunch all the numbers to figure out an overall star rating and then rank them accordingly.
So there's, there's a lot of things that have probably changed over the last number of years, right? So this is 2014's review. Let's kind of just backtrack just and float down memory lane for a moment. What do you think probably over the last number of years is the biggest change that you've seen in, you know, generally in platforms?
In platforms and tools, that's a great question. I think that just technology in general, when you have the web the way it's been, we've seen over the last few years a big move into not only providing the desktop-based platform, so your Windows-based platform, but also a web-based platform. And brokers have really migrated. In fact, majority of them now offer a web-based platform as well as a downloadable desktop-based platform. And for a long time, it was just all about the desktop, especially for active trading, and it still is today. But the web-based platforms have really caught up, and they're actually pretty in-depth. They're pretty impressive on what's been built.
Yeah, I mean, I know about how they build some of these things, and one of the problems, obviously, with the web-based is where's the information coming from, and mm-hmm. how is it being crunched? So it's easy enough to get a stream of data, right, of pricing and things like that. Now, when you start calculating it, though, where is it being calculated is the question, right? And how fast does that come? Is it on a centralized server, on the web? Is it something that's been crunched already? So, for example, you have just a simple moving average, for example. Well, that could be data that's been, continuously populated going backward. But then you start customizing is where the web usually had fallen down.
You're 100% correct. Yep. And for it depends on the type of investor. So for stockbrokers.com specifically, we see investors come to the site that are, hey, I just got out of college. I've never traded before. How do I learn? I need a broker. To, hey, I manage a $7 million portfolio and I place over 1,000 trades, a quarter, and I need this, all these margin requirements. And so you can see there's a full spectrum of people that come through. So for us, we see there's really, on the desktop side, those active traders like you're talking about, those milliseconds make a huge difference in where you're pulling data from and then calculating, crunching those numbers. But for a more casual investor, it's not going to be as big of a deal, and they want to see their pretty charts and easily draw their trend lines and support and resistance and easily place a trade.
Right. Now, what's happening with, let's kind of broad brush this for a second. What's happening, what you see with the general movement with transaction fees, there has been a couple of changes. First of all, obviously there was, there's like a, pick a name, like a Scott Trade always, oh, we're cheaper than this guy. And then you have this guy that's mm-hmm. a little cheaper than that guy. But then they have now a new thing where it's like a bundled trade process for individuals where they can go out and say, okay, we're going to take a flat cost and all that. What's been kind of going on in that area?
So over the course of 10 plus years, there was a general movement towards exactly what you're saying. Hey, we are X amount. Oh, now the competitor says, oh, we're $1 less, and then we're $1 less. That is, as far as flat fee trading is gone, it's kind of stabilized for the most part. It's leveled out. We saw some brokers go to extremes of, hey, free trading, and the only one left that really does that was included in our reviews, Merrill Edge, and you have to have a minimum amount of money to get free trades. But as trends go, the more recent thing we've seen is brokers becoming more transparent with pricing for activity, based on activity. So, for example, a trade station came out and changed their pricing last year, and now they made it more clear, say, hey, if you do X amount of volume, then we'll give you this rate. MB Trading changed up their option structure, so depending on how many contracts you trade, you can get a different rate. And whereas over years previous, it was kind of like a cable company. You'd call up your broker and say, hey, I'm placing hundreds of trades on your platform. I know for a fact I can get them cheaper elsewhere. And then broker says, okay, we'll lower your fees. Well, now over the last handful of years, it seems like the brokers are kind of changing that piece of it up. And it's been interesting to watch.
I got to tell you something. I got a very odd call from a friend of mine who said that he got solicited by a big firm. I think it was Fidelity maybe, or maybe it was one of those big boys. And he said that they're actually paying for large accounts. Have you heard about this? So,
well, the brokers always have offers for, you know, if you fund with X amount or transfer X amount of, you know, money, then we'll give you cash or free trades.
I'm talking about like I think it was like, I don't know if it's 2,000 or 2,500 per million of cash.
That sounds familiar. I mean, you know, I had to pull up all the offers. Some of the brokers have gotten pretty aggressive, especially when you get up to, you know, that $1 million price point or higher. So it wouldn't surprise me, but again, from an offer standpoint, but from a standpoint of, hey, Andrew, I know you're really an active trader and you have a large portfolio. Why don't you transition over from whichever broker you're at and we'll take care of you? I haven't heard of that. I haven't seen that in the industry.
Okay. So let's take a look at your actual survey from this now at stockbrokers.com. Anybody can see this. And if you click on the left side, there's a little tab says 2014 review. You click on it and it gives you all these very, very nice, well put together, by the way, clean. I'm not just saying that. It's nice where you just kind of click and, you know, get the different characteristics. And I like that little thing on the left there, how it kind of scrolls, how it scrolls with
Thanks,
you.
Andrew.
You know what I mean? So what is the, well, let's start with this. So was there a big change in the listing of best to worst from a year ago?
From best or worst, for our overall ranking, so, you know, there's those eight different categories, and we look at them individually again because there's different investors that are coming to the site, but focusing on that, the overall ranking, there wasn't too much changing up. Merrill Edge was one broker that was not included in review last year and then joined this year.
Mm-hmm.
So when they came in and they impressed us, they were number three overall, and as a result, then you're naturally going to bump down brokers, all the brokers below it. Another broker that bumped up a handful of spots was Fidelity last year. Their customer service especially, they almost sweeped that category in our testing. And they made a variety of improvements across the board that really bumped them up, three or four slots from the year previous.
Right. Some of these I haven't heard, like Just to Trade. Now, by the way, just as a full disclosure, is there any payment or how does this work from the firm side?
On what specifically?
Does Scott Trade or Merrill Edge, do they pay you to actually do this work? Or is there any kind of, I just want to make sure that my listeners always asking me, you know, is there any kind of, question about the clarity of being, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Just transparent with the business model.
Yeah,
definitely. So we make our money from referrals.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that we shy away from. It's kind of cool how the brand has evolved. So when we say our foundation is of unbiased reviews and ratings, that is the truth. In fact, looking at these top five brokers of this year based on overall, two or three of them, we don't even have marketing relationships with.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that focus on being unbiased, there's every single day, Andrew, that we are recommending brokers that it's all about the investor. It's not about what kind of kickback or what kind of referral fee do we get for bringing them over. As a result, and not only has the site, the brand credibility, you know, improved over the years, but the credibility within the industry. So now within the industry, our review is noted as the toughest in the industry because of those 266 plus variables and the respect from the brokers themselves. So like last year, Scottrade included us in one of their national TV commercials. TD Ameritrade will talk about us on their conference calls. We have great relationships with a lot of broker executives. And again, that just, you know, kind of gives a testament to, you know, it's about the investor first and taking care of the brand second.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I look at the platform on from a desktop standpoint and a web-based, and then also from a smartphone. So, smartphone, you break down into smartphone and let's call iPad or tablets. I find it interesting that you have the number one smartphone app is E-Trade, okay? But the number one iPad app is TD Ameritrade. And I find that interesting that either company wasn't able to transfer their presence from one to the other.
Yeah, that's actually really a great question, just because mobile trading has been such a fun area to watch and continue to evolve. So within mobile trading, we do all of our assessment. I'm an iPhone, Apple kind of junkie, so we do all of our assessing for the variables, you know, do you have this or do you have that on the smartphone. And there is a combination for each category of those variables and then an opinion-rated score.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to the smartphone, E-Trade and TD Ameritrade actually, or just mobile trading in general, we're really close. In fact, it came down this year to one variable, and E-Trade has a, we call it a customizable dashboard. So when you log into that mobile app, you can customize your view. You know, oh, I want to see a watch list, or I want to view my positions. Whereas TD Ameritrade does not have that. So E-Trade literally kind of squeaked out through a couple points the win over TD Ameritrade. Now, when it comes to like the number one app, that's an opinion-based a question, and that's just on me as the the author of the review. I look at all the apps, I play with them, and for the iPad specifically, TD Ameritrade, they took a really unique approach to the navigation within the app. So in the footer, when you log in, you can quickly access your positions. It's bug-free, it's easy to use. So whereas E-Trade, they transfer that great experience to the iPad.
Right.
But personal preference, that's just TD Ameritrade in my opinion.
Right. You know what's also nice is that when you go to the review, you click on the bottom of this stockbrokers.com, you go to the reviews, and you click on one of the reviews and just, look at that on the left-hand side. And I encourage everybody to check this out because some really cool stuff here. On the left-hand side is a few tabs like reviews, commissions, features, and all that, screenshots, which is great. And then you can actually do, a breakdown of all the different functions. You also have a comparative process here, right?
Yeah, yep. So with so many different investors visiting the site, you can compare any broker head-to-head, or you can compare all 17 brokers, side by side and see what their margin rates are or what other commissions and fees, and then from there drill down further. So in reality, Andrew, we have close to 20,000 words of research on the site. I think back to all the writing to get it done. But it's great because, some people are coming to the site looking for platforms and tools specifically or wherever it may be. So you can go read a 1,000-plus word review on any of the brokers and then go into a specific category like, new investors or commissions and fees, and then read a whole another, review on just that category and breaking it down.
Right. And then you have a commission calculator, which will give you a cost factor for, depending on, how you trade and all that. I'm just going to say this again. I like how the site looks. I'm just saying I like the layout. A lot of times, you see things that are just all over the place. Very graphics are where they should be in terms of, the look. And I just like I'm giving you a compliment here. It really looks very nice. Seriously.
We greatly appreciate it, Andrew. In fact, it's kind of funny because we're actually working on a redesign right now. Not to change the site, but evolve it. So it'll be more mobile friendly. You can, do those comparisons on your iPhone or on your iPad or whatever it may be.
Right. And then so you have all these different things that you can do. And then you also have some Forex brokers on there and you can do some comparisons and great stuff. So I wanted to segue over for a minute because I'm always trying to find, the best types of information. And this is obviously in the information education standpoint for when, people are looking to, either look for a new broker. I mean, and when you have this kind of availability of all these different brokers and then you can compare them, I think it makes it a lot easier than just trying to cobble together all your own stuff, using just a couple of keywords here and there. And then you also have this stock trading to go, which is kind of like, a very nice name. Like it's quickly pick it up and, I can find out things like, looking at a journal where you have your own blog, which is great. One of the things that I always wanted to suggest to brokers was that there should be a way to have a notes section on every idea or trade that you have so that you can reference it back in history. And you've actually created the availability of having a trade journal. Basically, it's Stock Trading to Go. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it? There's all sorts of little things you could do on the free side and also on the, on the premium side.
Yeah. Notes is a great one. Last year, I trade when I have free time, Andrew. It's like the review and then running the sites and just business in general. I trade my free time, and typically it ends up being in the summers and early fall. So last year I was doing all this active trading, day trading a lot. I ended up with a little over 450 round trips for the year, and the market was great, so that always makes it easier to invest with. But I got through this kind of new strategy I was working on for day trading, just cycling in and out throughout the day. And what had happened is I have an Excel sheet where I track my trades, which we surveyed our readers, and over around 40% of our readers on Stock Trading to Go use Excel to log their trades. And what I found, though, was when I really broke it all down and the commissions I was spending my profit and loss, I was making money. But when you factor in all the time and then the commission spend, I was actually flat. And it kind of hit this kind of like, oh my gosh, aha moment for me. Like, wow, you know, day trading, at least for me as an investor, this is not worth my time. I'm better off working on, you know, strategy G that I've been putting time into. Mm-hmm. And so made me think, like, if for Excel, it's difficult. You have to know the formulas. You have to know the macros and however far you go down the rabbit hole. But I wanted to build it and take it to the web and just make it easier to kind of drill down your own trade history and find out some of those patterns about yourself. Because I'm sure you'd agree, Andrew, trading is a very personal game. It's a very psychological game.
Yep.
And you're always, the more you can learn about yourself, it's only going to propel you forward. So
mm-hmm.
it kind of inspired this movement towards building tools and a platform for it. So we call it our Stocktrain and Go Trade Tools. You can import your trades from your broker or enter them by hand, whatever you prefer. And then you can go and analyze them, kind of like a screening for stocks. Well, you can screen your trades and say, all right, I want to look at all my trades that were up 5%, that, you know, I made this much money, had a stop loss within 3%, and then kind of drill down and learn about yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's always, I mean, that's really good because, you know, it's funny, you talk about a day trading strategy. I mean, the strategy is, right now the strategy is pretty simple. It's buy at 9:30.
Yes.
But you know, it's interesting. We've actually for the DH Unplugged show we do, we built a Google, very simple, but a Google spreadsheet, which can actually give you real time updates of the stock you have. You put in, for example, you put in, okay, are you going to go long? You're going to go short? What's your price that you picked it up at? What's the symbol? And it will calculate across, you know, your profit and loss, make different colors and all that. It's really nice because you have this, you know, tie-in. I'm sure you're probably aware of this. You have the tie-in to the Google Finance site, and you can actually bring that over. Whereas Excel, it's very difficult to get any data, like you said. You know, you can see historical information, but you can't actually manage a portfolio unless you know what you're doing or get a plug-in, right?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. Yep. And
so
that's
kind of, you know, so that we built that, and I was thinking about the other day, I was thinking, you know what? What if we were to actually make that somehow, conceptually, where you have alerts on there, right? So something's happening, you want an alert, and then you can reference what, you know, maybe it will email you saying, hey, by the way, you know, stock ABC hit $30, and you said on 12/1 that if it hit $30, breakout, check out this, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It'll automatically email you, alert you of your information. You know, I thought that was something, and you kind of expand on that a bit, but something where you can create it using scripts and all that, which is, you know, probably something like what you're doing here. You're using historical and looking at all that, but it would be kind of interesting to maybe, well, we'll talk about that, maybe build something for forward-looking ideas.
Certainly.
You know?
Well, you commented on just kind of like learning from the past, and there, I feel like as an investor, like logging or just entering those trades and looking and seeing the real-time data, if you can identify patterns, then essentially, you know, that will depend on what theory you believe in, but then you can use that to propel yourself forward and trade with. But I think that with the different tools that are available to you, regardless of using Excel or Google Finance, just entering those trades and taking a screenshot of a chart and putting it in a Dropbox folder or, you know, on your hard drive is going to provide a wealth of information and knowledge over the course of time.
Right.
I'm sure, you know, Andrew, for yourself, you can look back 5 years previously and say, oh, man, I made this trade, and here's what I bought, here's where I sold. And that has helped you become successful as an investor, you know, for yourself and your clients.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's the equivalent, I would say, and which I tell my son all the time. You go to class, and what are you doing in class? Well, we're learning. I say, well, you know what you do? Make sure to take notes. Because when you take those notes, I want you to come home, I want you to rewrite those notes. Because now there is a process of, the process of learning is not only necessarily one particular sense, you know, just seeing or hearing, whatever. You can actually accelerate learning, as far as I at least personally know, if you use multiple senses. So, for example, using, you know, writing down your notes is kind of listening, deciphering, and then reapplying the same information down on a piece of paper the way you heard it. You know, and this,
I think you're 100% correct. Yeah, and there's a funny analogy, or more like this fun analogy that I came up with when I was again going through all this analysis and ranting amongst myself. I'm like, oh my gosh, how did I not realize this? And I look at post-trade analysis, I compare it to football. So, you know, you have the big game on Sunday, you sit down, you have your, you know, chili and your beer, and you watch the game. Well, then, during this game, the players are playing, but you obviously have the coaches in the booth analyzing all the plays and calling the shots, and here's the defensive setup, da-da-da. So then, the game's over, win or loss. On Monday morning, those players, the team comes in, and they are reviewing the film. It's, hey, you, when you ran this way, you needed to actually be one step further to your left. And, hey, you know, Tom Brady, when you're actually stepping this way to throw that pass, you actually had this guy open and da-da-da.
Then from for example, it would be like, hey, center, on the opening play of the Super Bowl, probably try not to throw it over the top of the quarterback.
Exactly. Exactly, Andrew. So they learn from this, right? They review that film, and then they spend that next week, which unfortunately in the case of the Super Bowl, they were not able to do that, right. I guess, for next season.
Yep.
But they analyze that, and they work on that. And then when it comes to next Sunday, they play again. And I think that piece right there is that it's learning from that and practicing move forward is missed. And so we surveyed our readers on it, and it was just over 40% of our readers, or our 17,000-plus subscribers in Stock Trading 2 Go, don't log their trades or conduct post-trade analysis. And that, to me, Andrew, is kind of staggering.
Mm-hmm.
So how do these professional trader or professional football players or sports players, how do they get to where they're at? Well, they probably tie their shoes the same way, or they tape their hockey stick the same way. They are so honed in their craft. And I think with investing, if you aren't going to put in that time, then you're really just looking at it as, you know, gambling. It's another way to invest and, hey, I have some extra money and I want to, you know, I think Apple looks good here and I go on my merry way. But to succeed in Excel, you really need that post-trade analysis or just analyzing those trades, logging those notes. I've become really passionate about it. Strongly believer.
So what is the cost for the premium side of things? Oh, here it is right here. There's the investigator, the analyst, and the quant. That's cheap, $19 a month for the basic, and you get a 30-day free trial for any of those. Good. So you get 250 trades on the investigator. This is, I assume, 250 trades for how long? I mean, for...
So it's just log trades. It's like Dropbox, same concept. So it's round trips. So even if you pyramid into a position and you buy 10 times and you sell once, technically it's 11 trades. We look at it as one completed trade.
So
you can store that much data on your account.
So if I take it and then I delete a bunch of it, can I put more back on?
Sure can.
So I can do a total of 250 trades, round trip trades, that I am looking at in terms of analyzing, right? Is that correct?
Right, and then all the tools and function are there for you.
Right.
So,
and then when I hit the 250, though, can I then delete that whole range and then add more, or do I have to go to the next level to $14.95 a month?
Yeah, so you could go to the next level, or you could delete them and then re-kick it back up.
So you can look at different strategies. Okay, this strategy did this. If you had, let's say, one strategy that you did, I don't know, I'm just picking a number, 50 trades, then strategy two did this, right? That kind of thing?
Exactly, yeah. Yep. And that's what I found about myself. And I did, again, you could do this in Excel. I wanted to make it easier to drill down and kind of hone
right.
And finding out those kind of patterns as for yourself as an investor. But yeah, that's the exact concept.
So let's say it says, grow over time. This is what it says on the site. Analyze your completed trades each year and see your trader profile change as you develop into a disciplined investor. I like that. Very good. Disciplined investor.
Isn't that the disciplined word? Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it,
Andrew? Yeah, that's why we call this the disciplined investor. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey, listen, thanks so much for coming on. And I think that this is some of the great stuff that people can use. I don't care if you're totally experienced or not, and just to look at what's going on, get some more access to the brokers that are out there, as well as some of the really nice tools. And we didn't even talk about it on Stock Trading 2 Go, by the way. And by the way, I'm pimping him only because I like the site. It's not because he's paying me like that. There's some good quote unquote blogging, writing, concept in there, market recaps, all sorts of interesting things. Actually, this is you got some good charts here, and from a variety of people that you. Work with, and there's your picture right there. What a handsome fella, Blaine.
Thank you, Andrew.
I appreciate your time. We'll talk soon, buddy.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye bye. Well, there's some new and different tools probably you haven't seen before. I think that is some pretty cool stuff that he has to offer. So I thought I'd bring it to you so you can have something to fiddle with and to check it out and see if it benefits your trading and your portfolio. So there you got it. All right, so I mentioned at the top of the show that I wanted to talk about five things that you need to know about, right? All right, so what do we got? Number one, news. News is leading the market. News is actually leading the market around by the nose. We talked about a moment ago the whole Under Armour discussion, but really, there's a funny thing going on. usually the news, dependent on what the news says, is determinant of what the reaction of markets are. And there may be a delay sometimes. There may be a kind of a reverse of what you would think would go on, dependent on the news. And right now we have a lot of that going on because, of course, of the Fed's involvement. But news, it's almost as if the fact that there is news is what actually makes markets move. It's not the content of the news. It's the fact that there is news. If you've watched market reaction closely at a time when news is actually put out, you'll see that it moves wildly in various directions without any ability to understand what the directions are. And oftentimes it ends up being, as we have seen recently with the negative news, it moves down pretty hard and then it just pops right back up. It's almost like there's a continual buy program that's been going on for a little while here that is almost, in a eternal loop that regardless of the news, you're still going to see these buyers come in. And that could be a sign of, at first I thought it was actually, and it was, retail investors when you saw that the 9:30 pop would occur. Have you seen some of those recently where markets are coming in on the futures into the open and then bam, 9:30 happens. It's like, what in the world is going on here? It's like there's a last chance sale going on for stocks, you know, where it's just absolute bedlam of buying. It's like people are climbing over each other to buy. And yeah, of course, you have things like short covering that goes on and short squeezes, et cetera. But really a kind of an amazing amount of buoyancy when it comes to movement on the news. But I want you to be careful about the fact that, you know, if you have a preponderance of bad news on, you know, on the markets when you see a news item come out and you see this real hard drop, well, the reaction has been to buy on every dip. So that's what's going on. But be careful. That doesn't last forever. You know that. I know you know that. Still, we do buy until the buying stops, of course, and that's kind of the routine if you're trading on an intraday basis. But be careful of that. The second thing I want to mention to you, very important. The Fed and a variety of other groups, but the Fed in particular, holds its actual minutes, its notes, its the entirety of the conversations that occur behind closed doors in their various meetings for about 5 years. Because they don't want to have any of the, supposedly they don't want to have any of the information politicized. They don't want, of course, you to really know what's going on. And when time passes, you really don't care anymore. So the 2008 notes, minutes, and entirety of the conversations were released this weekend. And of course, you release it over the weekend, so people goes right underneath the, you know, underneath and gets kind of pushed under the carpet. But one of the things that was really interesting is went through the highlights of that and looked at all the conversations that happened. And there was clearly a dispersal in the beginning of 2008 in particular of whether or not we were in a recession, whether we're going to go into a recession, and whether or not this was really going to be a bad situation that occurred. So let's just chalk it up that they didn't know what was going on. In fact, throughout 2008, the conversation was continually focused on the amount of stimulus that was going to be involved in the markets and the role of the Fed. And in fact, I thought it really fascinating that they were constantly talking about when they were going to start removal. There was a few of the Fed governors who talked about that once they go down the road of not just stimulus, but of quantitative easing, that they don't know how they're going to get out of it. It really becomes a never ending process, but they had to do it anyway, which is kind of the situation that we are in now. But again, they continually talked about how to start slowing it down and maybe when in the short term they were going to start raising interest rates. Now, this is before we went to the ZIRP, Z-I-R-P, the zero interest rate program. And now we're at the 0 to 0.25, effectively a 0% Fed funds rate. And this was before that. We were still at, you know, in the beginnings and mids of 2008, what, about 3% or so, and they were dropping it by 75 basis points here and there. And, you know, there's a lot of things that went on about conversation and how to present things. I think it was Mishkin who talked about financial crisis, but don't use the word crisis in public. You know, instead of that, use, what did he say now? He said use financial disruption. So you can't, you know, he said that. It's right in the notes. You know, don't use the word, even though we are in a financial crisis, don't use those words. Because, of course, what's the Fed's job? The Fed's job is to make sure that we have plenty of liquidity in the markets. You have a clean amount of flow in and out of the intra-market events on a daily and intraday basis, of course, and throughout not only the U.S., but throughout the world. And in addition to that, they're fighting inflation and they have all these different mandates, et cetera. But one of the big things is you're not going to find them coming out and saying, hey, you know what? Things are really bad when times are bad, because what they want to do is they're constantly trying to talk things up. They're really cheerleaders for the markets, and that's great. You know, of course, we've had a few in history who have been on the opposite side, who have been trying to do them do what they can to, you know, tamper down and fight inflation. And, you know, those are the bad guys, quote unquote. But what we saw throughout that was that Yellen, pretty clean-headed and clean thinking throughout, and was very much in favor of stimulus. But I must tell you that I think there's some questions that will come up, because she also was very vocal about not wanting to have a eternal stimulus program and making sure that the exit strategy is sound. And also what they talked about was that how they need additional programs to regulate the too big to fail, but would continually end with, but we don't have those yet. And throughout 2008, this was kind of the progression. They got spooked pretty badly towards the end of 2008, naturally, with the banks going down and all the things that were happening with the freeze-ups of the markets and the inability for the inner workings of not only the U.S., but the world financial system to work cohesively or at all, and the breakdowns that were happening at a rapid pace. And all the tools that they had were really to just throw more at it, just to throw more stimulus, et cetera. I don't think if you were to ask any of them, they would have thought that back in 2008, even in 2009, when things were really hitting rock bottom, that in 2013 and 2014, they would still be at it when they saw a significant turn in the unemployment rate and the economy getting better. I think if you would have sat them down and gave them the numbers that we have right now, and you would have given those to them in 2008, and they said, what would you be doing at this point? They would have probably said, hey, we won't have any stimulus program because we have a recovery that's going on, and now we need the economy to heal itself. Very fascinating, if you can get your hands on this, is it's a pretty long piece, but there are some places that have put out highlights of it. Very interesting, the Fed minutes from 2008. Now, I want to get on to housing. This is the third thing that you need to know. You know, we've been hearing about that there has been a significant amount of slowing in housing, and it's primarily due to the whole idea that, of course, people can't get out in the cold weather. Now, we saw that last week the sales of previously owned U.S. homes dropped in January to the lowest level in more than a year, as this weather condition really was creating a problem. There's a lack of supply. But the big issue was it wasn't all about weather. Because you know what? If you read the headlines, yeah, weather played a part in it. But you know, it's only in certain areas. For example, I'm in Florida. Weather had nothing to do with anything. California, Texas. So really what you had was the areas that had weather were affected. Okay, yes, I'll give you that. But also you see that when you look at the entirety of all of it, purchasing a home has become much less affordable. You know, the 30-year fixed rate was about 4.3% in January, February. It was up from about 3.56 about a year ago. Okay, so that's a big issue. You have the fact that the Fed is continually talking about, you know, this whole idea of tapering, and the increase in interest rates, and the fact that you have home builders, home builders coming out with many more houses, and you also have the fact that housing prices have gone up so much. You know, you look at the affordability index, and it's significantly less affordable than was the case just a short time ago. And that being the case, it's really a bigger issue than just the weather. So don't let that fool you. Number four, the G20 meeting. So this weekend, the G20, heads of G20 met, and they talked about, okay, what are they going to do and what's going to happen? It was kind of interesting. I followed all the different discussions and final remarks and the summations of all the different players that went to this meeting. And the big thing they came out with was at least what they say they're going to do. We'll see what happens when they actually put it down. But they're looking for, hey, we are all going to be behind a 2% increase in global GDP more than we are at a point now. In other words, they're going to really push for an additional 2% on where they are this time right now. We have no idea, but they say they're committed to it. And they said that growth is still below the rates that need to create jobs, but they want to be able to create at least a $2 trillion more in real economic activity and tens of millions of new jobs. So they have these policies that they are talking about. We have no idea what those are. If they're the individual policies of each of the countries and the stimulus and all that, okay. But other than that, there's not anything new they really put out. I will tell you that news will probably come along and be good. And the whole idea, again, back to cheerleading, the whole idea of what they do in terms of their communique is all about providing a significant amount of potential outward positive attitude so that we could say that, oh, it's going to get better over time. It's going to get better because even if we start slowing down here, you know what? The G20 has some kind of, which we don't know about, but some kind of plan or policy which is looking to increase global GDP by 2% over the next 5 years. Again, an increase over what their last numbers were, I guess. So this is kind of what came out of the G20. One of the things that's also interesting was that Japan was highly on the defensive. You know, Japan's all about, hey, we're doing our part, and hey, we got everything set up already, and hey, we don't really need to do anything. Look at us. We're doing all this. At the same time, Shinzo Abe, who is the guy who put in this Abenomics, which is a massive stimulus and debasing the currency and doubling the monetary base, well, his ratings have actually gone down pretty significantly. We also saw that this weekend that there was a study that Japan, less than 1 out of 5 of the companies are looking to increase wages. So those are some of the things that are going on. But really interesting how they were very much in the defensive mode. So G20 is going to play an important thing. You'll see that splashed all over the screens coming up over the next few days that something's going on they're going to try to do that we don't know about. And the word framework is going to be there all over the place. You know, one of those watch out words, framework, means they have nothing, but they're saying a lot about it. And finally, the fifth thing is that less than 1,000 days to the next election. And what we're already seeing is a lot of politics going on, trying to bring in, the people that need to be in play for election time. For example, there was a cost of living adjustment that was supposed to go into place where there was a cut to the cost of living for certain Social Security and certain other pensions that were government-sponsored. And looks like it's not going to go into place now. In other words, this whole idea that, yeah, we're going to cut back. Democrats are all about we're going to cut back and we're going to do what you know, some things that you want, Republicans. So the Republicans say, okay, fine, we'll increase this, we'll do that. Everybody's all happy and, you know, trying to do what they can to come up with some kind of grand bargain, which is not going to happen ever in our lives, at least with the current grouping that's there. They're pulling back on some of this already, and they're just going to continue spending. And why? Well, think about who that targets and who they want to vote for them, whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats. I don't care which side it is. But you're going to see a lot of politicking going on and a lot of things that were hopefully going to get accomplished over the recent time period in terms of budgets and all that is really going to be thrown out the window. I don't think anything's going to get done now because they're starting to ramp up into the, you know, the gum flapping and discussions about what they can do and appeasement for votes. So those five things, news, leading the markets, watch that. Watch that for, you know, good and bad. Look for opportunities. Fed minutes in 2008 pretty much didn't know what was going on, didn't know what they were doing, and thought that they were actually going to be pulling out of the stimulus by this point. Housing is slowing, but not because only of weather. G20 meeting, we have a 2% increase that they're pressing for, and politics coming up pretty hard. Now, the other thing I want to talk to you about, I want you to watch for next week coming up, is something that was, we'll see how this plays out, because there's news coming out, but you really don't know exactly where this is going. But here's something interesting. So health insurers that participate in the Medicare Advantage program for the elderly, you know, this is Humana, United Healthcare. You have a few others there, like WellPoint, and there's a few more. But think about the HMO companies and the health insurers that are involved in Medicare Advantage, okay? Well, they're looking at a base cut of their payments by about 3.5% next year. And this is brand new. This happened pretty much on after the markets on Friday, Saturday. The payment reductions proposed are subject to negotiation with the industry and aren't expected to become final until April, but these cuts could really see a significant amount of problems. And we saw that after the close on Friday that United Healthcare was down about 4%. And you saw that I believe Aetna was down, and watch for Humana, all these, and United Healthcare and WellPoint, WLP. Watch all these companies, because if in fact this does come into play, these cuts may be bigger than they were proposed and didn't take into account any adjustments. So this is really interesting that this could be a real problem for the earnings in this area, okay? So I want you to watch these stocks and put them on your radar on the short side. And we'll put the list of some of those companies that we talked about on the disciplinedinvestor.com show notes from this particular episode, so you can have that and utilize that. That's about it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have a question, send it to me, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Listen to DH Unplugged each and every week on Wednesdays it comes out. Myself and John Dvorak talk about some crazy things. Otherwise, I'll see you soon. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.